Hi. Let's get going. So happy to see so many people. Okay, so today, this week, we're carrying on our series, and we hit Abraham last week, Parshat Lech Lecha, and we carry on with Abraham, the middle of the Abraham Parshiot, Parshat Vayera. But rather than speaking about Abraham frontally and per se this week, I actually want to focus on Ishmael, on Abraham's first son. Let's start with a general question. If you were to try and highlight one theme that runs throughout Bereshit from beginning to end and repeats itself time and time again, could you find one? Don't mean like a general idea, man, God, people, land, etc. One story that repeats itself time and time again. Michelle?
This might be too general, but like chosenness or sibling rivalries and things.
Does anybody want to take Michelle's generality and make it a little bit more specific? Avi?
Older siblings usurped by younger siblings.
Very good. So there's a... there's a wonderful biblical scholar at Berkeley. He's quite an old man now. It's called Robert Alter, and he's got an extremely ugly phrase to describe Sefer Bereshit, but it's a very true phrase. Sefer Bereshit, claims Robert Alter, is all about, everybody ready for this horrible phrase, displacement of the primogenitor. Okay, what is the primogenitor? The primogenitor is the firstborn. Okay, you can start from, leave aside the creation of the world, that's not really about mankind. You can start from Cain and Abel, who we spoke about a number of weeks ago, the first brothers, the first siblings, and the story that repeats itself, like Michelle says, it is one of sibling rivalry, but more specifically, the firstborn never gets it. The firstborn is always knocked out. Avi's word, usurped, is an interesting one. For whatever reason, the first one never actually gets it, which is a fascinating idea, especially when you consider that within the Torah, within the Bible as a whole, the firstborn does actually have a privileged position. And in some ways, the first true firstborn that we're going to get to this week is Ishmael. And there is a tendency, a lot of the time, to look at the losers of Sefer Bereshit, those that aren't chosen, in a very negative light, right? Ishmael, Esav, they become seen as, in some ways, almost the villains of Sefer Bereshit, and this is maybe developed in later literature, and sometimes they're associated with be it later powers that persecute Israel, Esav's association with Rome, etc. However, today I want to try and do almost the opposite. Okay, there's something that I'm sure many of you are familiar with if you've studied in lots of the sorts of schools and yeshivot that we've studied in. In Israel, this is called Tanakh Begova Enayim, to look at the Bible with raised eyebrows. That means to treat its characters as human and to say the biblical heroes, their heroism is not the fact that they are just sort of like completely faultless and completely flawless. Rather, their heroism and their interest lies in the fact that they are not perfect human beings. They're like you, they're like me. They live regular human lives. And within that, I can then identify with them and understand that indeed they do actually fall, and they also then rise. And that's what makes the study of Tanakh, I think, so wonderful, so interesting. So that's what I try to do, and it's what many of us try to do when it comes to looking at the Bible's heroes. But I want to also suggest that we should also think about doing the opposite as well. Those who are considered the more negative characters of Tanakh, well, we should also try and hold back from stereotyping them to view them in purely negative terms. So that's what I want to try and do with Ishmael. If you've just considered Ishmael in the past perhaps as one of the negative characters of Bereshit, I want to try and paint something of a different picture. We're going to focus our discussion specifically on one portion in this week's parasha. It's chapter 21 of Bereshit. And you can turn there. However, whilst you're turning there, I'll just point out that Ishmael has already been on the scene already in Parashat Lech Lecha. He's Abraham's firstborn, born not through Abraham's wife, Sarai, but through the maidservant Hagar. And Sarah has clearly felt a strong ambivalence, a lack of comfort with the fact that Hagar and Ishmael have now attained position. She has told Abraham to expel Hagar once Hagar has become pregnant. That was in last week's parasha. Hagar flees into the wilderness crying. And Sarah, and maybe Abraham, appear very heavily criticized for doing this, for this what's seen as an act of cruelty towards Hagar. In an very extreme statement, one of the greatest of medieval commentators, the Ramban says that all of the sufferings that the descendants of Ishmael, associated with the Muslim world, will inflict upon the children of Israel, all of that is payback for Sarah's expulsion of Hagar into the wilderness. It's a very extreme statement. The Ramban's not living in the 20th, 21st century, the Ramban's living in the 13th century in Spain. Of course, you don't need to agree with the Ramban, you can understand it differently, or you can not understand it being literal, but it's a strong statement which really captures something. Sarah certainly feels very ambivalent towards Hagar. What about Abraham? So when Abraham was told that, in fact, he was going to have another son, a second son, there's a fascinating thing that he says, Lu Yishmael Yichyeh, let it just be go through Yishmael. What's wrong with Yishmael? Why cannot Yishmael, he be my only son, he be my inheritor? Anyway, time has moved forward. Ishmael has been born, Ishmael has grown up, he's been circumcised along with Abraham and the rest of the family. And now, Yitzchak has also been born. So, if you have a Chumash handy, page 96, if we've all got this one, and it's we're within chapter 21. And let's start with just the first verse. This is the verse which seemingly contains the great sin, the great error on Yishmael's part. V'terei Sarah et ben Hagar haMitzrit, asher yalda laAbraham metzachek. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, in other words, Ishmael, asher yalda laAbraham, who was born to Abraham, metzachek. What's the translation of mitzachek? Sorry? I heard someone say something, I didn't see where it was from.
Jesting,
sporting is often one of the ones used. And clearly it's being done to Yitzchak. Yishmael is doing something to Yitzchak. So here are the source sheets if you want to pass them around. Now, this is a phrase, this idea of Yishmael sporting, Yishmael, whatever, let's just call it mitzachek. What does it mean, this mitzachek? What is it that Sarah sees Yishmael doing? Should be enough source sheets, reinforcements came. It's just one sheet for now. Because it's so terrible, whatever it is that she sees, that she then says to Abraham, Vatomer la'Avraham, Garesh ha'ama hazot ve'bana. Expel this maidservant and her son. Ki lo yirash ben ha'ama hazot im b'ni im Yitzchak. Because this son of a maidservant shall not inherit with my son, with Yitzchak. Whatever it is that Ishmael is doing is so terrible that Sarah says, you've got to get him out of here. And it's the second time that she says it. Right? She'd said it originally in last week's parasha, in Parashat Lech Lecha. And even though Hagar had returned and Sarah had been criticized for it, nevertheless she says it again. So what is this mitzachek? So I've put here quite a long piece. It's from a Talmudic source, from the Tosefta. Does everybody have a source sheet, or at least able to see a source sheet? Yeah? Okay, I'll take silence as acquiescence. There's actually one more here, if anyone can share it. So here we've got a few opinions. Okay. Now this is a very interesting source to read about the relationship between what's called pshat and drash. Right? Pshat, normally translated as the simple, straightforward reading of the text, and drash, the more, if you like, creative reading of the text. And does somebody want to read for us? We can just read the English. We're going to have four opinions. Okay, four opinions given by the rabbis of the Talmud as to what it was that this mitzachek was. Volunteer to read? Please. Yeah. I might have given you the wrong source sheet. Rabbi Akiva. The first opinion, Rabbi Akiva, is that what is this tzchok that Ishmael is doing in front of Yitzchak? Idolatry. Okay, number two.
Rabbi Eliezer, son of Rabbi Yossi, had a good belief, thought that tzchok referred to here as sexual immorality. As it is written, Potiphar's wife complains about Yosef, the Hebrew slave, whom you brought to us, came to me to make sport with the Chachmi.
Okay, so it's not idolatry according to the second reading. This time it's actually sexual immorality. Number three. So that's quoting from a story in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, the second book of Samuel, where tzchok there refers actually to bloodshed. So we've got three options, right? None of them particularly good. One is idolatry, one is sexual immorality, and the other one is bloodshed. One of these three things is what Ishmael was doing to Yitzchak, in front of Yitzchak. Something so terrible that you can well understand why Sarah would say, He has to get out of here. The person telling this story is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and he carries on as follows.
But I say, heaven forfend that such actions would be carried out in a household of that righteous man. It is possible that the man concerning whom we read, for I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him. But if idolatry, sexual immorality, or bloodshed committed within his household, surely not.
Carry on.
Rather, Yitzchak refers to here concerning the matter of inheritance. When Yitzchak was born to Abraham, everyone was joyful and said, a son has been born to Abraham. A son who has been born to Abraham will inherit the world and take both portions. Ishmael scorned this mitzachet and stopped, saying, do not be fools, do not be fools. I'm the firstborn, and I shall take both portions. For it is from this response that we understand the continuation of the description concerning Korach.
Fascinating. So four opinions, three of them are in a sense similar to one another. Whatever it was that Ishmael was doing was something terrible, one of the, what we call the three cardinal sins, idolatry, sexual immorality, or bloodshed. The fourth one is a much, much more nuanced one. It was an argument over inheritance. So I'm going to open up the floor to what do you think, which appeals to you more, which one do you think is the truer one, but Ben already has something.
I was wondering how Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai Ben Yochai could say that like this wouldn't happen in Abraham's house if one generation later we saw Esau and Yitzchak's house doing possibly all three of these things.
That's an interesting question. That also depends upon assuming that's taking place with Esau. Do we have that explicitly taking place in the text with Esau, or is that also a midrashic reading in? And if it's a midrashic reading in, then who's to say it's necessarily shared by many, including Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? Let me maybe put the question one way. of these four opinions, and maybe let's call it these two opinions, the three altogether and then one, what's pshat and what's drash? Which one strikes you as the, if you like, the correct, the straightforward reading of the text, and which one strikes you as the elaboration? Yeah, please.
I would say it's the inheritance because it's exactly.
Torah. Sorry, it's the.
I would say it's the inheritance.
Is the
inheritance?
Is which one? Is that that's the pshat? That's the simple, straightforward reading.
Yeah.
Right. Why do you say that?
Because that's to what Sarah alludes when she speaks of kicking Hagar out.
Right. He won't inherit.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. Anybody else? So yeah, Michelle. Right. Interesting. That's also a translation of that passage. That he's going to be a wild man. It's also translated in other ways. But yeah. So you're saying there is some already foreshadowing.
I don't think I would agree with the latter one anyway. That
right.
That's really
more. Okay, Atara.
I agree that I think Shad is referring to the inheritance, but is it possible that Ishmael wasn't actually doing anything, and this was all kind of in Sarah's head because of her insecurities? I mean, if you look at the
interesting.
If you look at the verses that lead up to it, she says explicitly in Pasuk Vav, she says, "Vatomer Sarah Kolkafali Elokim Kol Hashemayim Fakli." So everyone who hears about the fact that I'm having a son is going to mock me. Like, they're not going to believe it. So it's like almost implicit that before she even sees anything occur between Ishmael and Yitzhak, that she already has this preconceived notion that one son is going to be, or whoever hears about her son is going to be mocking the other, and this happens right after he's weaned, and there's this big celebration for him. So, I mean, I'm kind of understanding it as, like, Ishmael, maybe he was teasing Yitzhak because the attention was suddenly on the younger brother, but I think it's also possible that, like, her insecurities were emphasized in these moments because she saw that her son was growing up, he's just been weaned, she's a little bit more unstable with these ideas and with the fact that he's growing more detached from her.
Right.
And she's concerned about his future.
Right.
In relationship to the woman who was always undermining her to begin with.
I think that's an excellent reading. I was going to suggest something along those lines in a little bit.
Sorry.
No, it wasn't going to be a major point. It was just going to be... If you've already brought it up now, I'll just run with it a little bit. I don't know if this was the specific point you were putting your finger on, but something that's so what I really don't know how Christians love Bible, right? Unless they speak Hebrew, I really do not know how they get almost anything out of it. Meaning, if you haven't got access to the Hebrew, you lose so much of the magic. So really, what Atara is pointing out is that what makes this and thousands of other stories just sort of so fun to try and pick apart is that the Hebrew language is so often you have the same root word having many disparate meanings. So we've actually seen, although it was claimed that the first three cases are not pshat, they're the elaboration, well, to tell you the truth and to be fair, each one cited a proof text somewhere else in Tanakh, somewhere else in the Bible, in which the same root, tzadik, chet, kuf, tzchok, was used to mean sexual immorality or idolatry or violence very clearly, very explicitly. So, definitely, in a sense, you see that this isn't coming out of nowhere. But at the same time, as Atara points out, well, it also means something else. It means to laugh or to sport at. And just a few verses earlier, Sarah has said, anybody who hears about it is going to laugh at me. And now, I like Katara's idea, she sort of sees it everywhere, right? And she sort of focuses it on Yishmael, and, it was inevitably going to happen. So, we can imagine people in the circumstance where they are always going to see something negative. They're walking into it in a certain mind frame. I just want to add one little additional thing, which is, what is Yitzhak's name? Yitzhak, right? Yitzhak is Yitzhak's name. What is it that Yishmael is doing? Right, thank you, very good. That's the best way of putting it. Yishmael is Yitzhakim, right? Yishmael is Mitzachek. He is making himself into Yitzhak, right? That's exact. Now, it could be read as the Torah suggesting as sporting, as mocking, and Yitzhak is called Yitzhak because of that laughter. But it could also be read, and this is the way in which I've always thought of it, as Yishmael is trying to make himself like Yitzhak, right? And it's that that arouses his anger. Pinchas, you have your hand up?
No, I was going to say that you're talking
about. Ah, okay, excellent. Baruch Shoki Bunty. Okay, so the options are out there. There's the extreme options, which Rashi quotes as to what it was that Yishmael was doing, and this is what contributes to Yishmael being viewed in such a negative light. And there are also much more nuanced versions which actually, you know, in Atara's reading, and you know, I think possibly also within Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's reading, put this just as much as just sort of an inevitable, if you like, just a clash. So I want to do now one of my favourite of all readings that I have throughout all of Tanakh, just as an extremely simple thing to do, in which you will hopefully see that the Tanakh contains deep, what we will call in a modern jargon, literary techniques, which, if you are sensitive to them, are going to reveal true depths. So what I want you to do now is to take a couple of minutes, and you can do this by yourself or b'chevrutah with in partnership with a person next to you. I want you to read the following story. The story from the verse that we began, it's a short story, Pasuk Tet, verse 9, so that's right at the top of page 96. And I want you to read to really just the bottom of that page, the end of Pasuk Yud Zayin. So verse 9-17, this is the story of the expulsion of Hagar and Yishmael. I want you to read it to yourself in partnership. I just want you to ask one question. Are there any words that are superfluous, that you wouldn't expect to be there? And are there any words that are lacking, that you would expect to be there, and that aren't there? Okay? So just take a couple of minutes to do that, and then we will come back. So from Pasuk Tet to Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 9 to verse 17, basically all of page 96. Okay, right, let's come back together. Thoughts? Ha-ha. Okay, anybody who didn't hear Gabe just now, what are the thoughts? What jumps out at you when you read it carefully? Yeah?
It never says his name,
just
keeps it.
Okay, Yofi. So you and Gabe on the money, you're straight in there. Okay? What is the word which is absent? What is the word which is not there? Yishmael, the word which you would so expect to be there, is not there. So I want to share with you now the reading of Nechama Leibovitz. This is not in Nechama Leibovitz's book on Bereshit. Nechama Leibovitz has a wonderful short essay. I don't know if it's in English. I haven't seen it in English. In Hebrew, it's called Ketzad Lilmod Perek Batanach, how to learn a chapter of Tanakh, where she just goes through a number of very simple techniques, extremely simple techniques, which if you are aware of them, just completely bring it to life, taking it from seeming like a relatively closed text to one which has got a huge amount of thoughts and opinions going on. So the word Yishmael does not appear in the text. Well, what does appear in the text? What's there in place of it? So, somebody wants to read the Hebrew, and as you read the Hebrew out to me, I'll write down every time that we've got an A. Okay, do you want to read the Hebrew for me?
Sure,
from Pasuk Tet.
From Pasuk
Tet, yeah. Okay, so what's the first
one?
Okay. Ben Hagar Hamitzvit. Okay, good. So, what's this one we've got now there? Ben-Hava, which, for intents and purposes, we'll call the same thing as Ben-Hagar. It's reached Ben-Hama. Okay, the son of the maidservant.
Al-Dot
who? Ben-Hav. Right? Now, what's he called? His son. So, Ishmael has gone from being the son of Hagar the Egyptian to being his son, Abraham's son. Okay? What was he called in that verse? Na'ar. Okay? What's Na'ar mean? Youth.
Teenager.
Right? Youth. Okay. Very good. So far, how many verses, what verse are you up to?
That was
Yud Bet. So we've only done three verses, and we've got at least three different names for Ishmael, and none of them are Ishmael. Carry on. What was that?
Ben Ha'ama.
Now we've had Ben Ha'ama, right? But now he gets called it again. Okay? So Ben Ha'ama times two. What was that? Zarachah. Okay. He's also, Ben Ha'ama and Zarachah. Okay. Carry on. Yeled, right? Interesting, right? What's Yeled mean?
Child.
Carry on. Run out, and Hagar casts away the Yelet. Carry on. Yelet again. Okay, so she goes and sits at the distance of an arrow shot, and she cries. Carry on. Don't cry, Hagar. God has heard the voice of the youth. Basher Husham, where he is. Okay? So I've written out the names. Right? Ishmael is not called Ishmael, but he's called almost a dozen other things. He goes Ben Hagar Hamitri, Ben Ha'amar, Ben Hamar, Na'al, Na'al, Ben Hamar, Zavacha, Benor, Yeled, 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 Na'al. Okay? Can we work out any rhyme or reason to this? Any strategy to it?
It's based off who's speaking.
Very good. Right? You might have noticed the cross here. It's not because we're doing inter-religious discussions tonight. Who is speaking? So, Ben Hagar HaMitzri. When Ishmael is called the son of Hagar the Egyptian, the son of the maidservant, who's speaking?
Sarah.
Okay, excellent. When he is called Benor, who is that? His son? Abraham. Abraham has him as two things. Abraham has him as Benor, his son, and he has him as Yelet, the boy, the child. People beginning to see the way in which we're working? Having sensitivity to the name which Ishmael is called, he's not called Ishmael, gives you the perspective of each character in the story on Ishmael. So Sarah can't take him there. Why? Because she sees him as this foreign imposition in her own family of Ben Hagar HaMitzri, the son of Hagar the Egyptian, the son of the maidservant. Abraham, it's so difficult in his eyes, it's so terrible for him. Why? Because who is Ishmael for Abraham? Abraham is Benor. Abraham is his son. Who else is he for him? He's Yelet. He's the child. He's the boy. Sarah?
It's definitely referring to Ishmael when it says Benol, the first time when it says Abba Dol Benol. And I ask that because, right, preceding that, like, Sarah is saying that, like, Ishmael won't inherit with her son, with Yitzchak is the last son to be mentioned. And then it says that Abraham was disturbed by these things concerning his son. So is it possible that he's not even expressing concern for Ishmael at this point, and that God just kind of assumes and says he'll be okay, he'll inherit also?
Who would it then be about Yitzchak?
About Ishmael. I mean, the surface reading would suggest that Abraham is very upset by what
right.
Sarah says to him, and so God comforts him by saying,
yeah.
Don't worry, both of your sons will inherit.
Yeah.
But it seems ambiguous to me which son Benoah is referring to.
Interesting. I think the simple, straightforward reading is definitely that the son is Ishmael, and he calls him Benoah. Intriguing that it would be possibly Yitzchak, but I think the continuation bears out that it's Ishmael, and he's calling him his son. Similarly, for Hagar, obviously, he is Yeled, he is the boy, he is the child. She's crying at her poor son who is unable to survive. And now here's the interesting one, the fourth one on the compass. What is he in God's eyes? Well, he is Na'ar, right? What does it mean by Na'ar, a youth, as people said, older than Yeled? What does it mean by that? By calling him Na'al, God is saying to Abraham, it's all right. It's not so terrible. He's going to survive. He's going to be okay. He's not a helpless child. He's actually able to stand on his own 2 feet. And then he calls him Ben Ha'amah, son of the maidservant. Who else called him Ben Ha'amah?
Sarah.
Fascinating, right? So God uses Sarah's line of Ben Ha'amah, says, and this Ben Ha'amah, in other words, this person who Sarah views as Ben Ha'amah, nevertheless, Zaracha. What's Zaracha? Your seed, your inheritance. That's like the ultimate praise word. Even though he is Ben Ha'amah, he is also Zaracha. He is also, you'll see, he's also going to become a great person. Not also, I'd say, despite the fact that he is Ben Ha'amah, and that Sarah is insisting on him being thrown out, nevertheless, he is also Zarephath. It's so simple, and it's so powerful. Just read this way, what have you got? Ishmael's name is never mentioned, but he is the site on which all of these four, if we can call them characters, if we call Hashem a character, all of these four parties see Ishmael, right? See him as something they are ripping apart. Sarah can't stand him, he has to get out. For Abraham, he's so pained, he's his son, he's his child, so too Hagar. For Hashem, he'll be alright, he is Na'ar. And although Sarah sees him as the son of the maidservant, nevertheless, he is also Zarephath. Just one second. One quick question. The word Ishmael does actually appear. Has anybody spot it? Yud-Zayin. Go on, Danny. It's true, there's a space in between the first half of the word and the second half of the word, but how powerful is that? Right? At the very moment of the greatest tragedy, right, of dying in the desert, Yishma Elohim et kol hana'al, and God hears the voice of the youth, and points the angel. Even though in everybody's eyes he is in some way compromised, in some way seen, nevertheless, his actual name of Yishmael comes through in God hearing him. And this, of course, is the real textual basis for just an amazing midrash. I'll come to the question in a minute. An amazing midrash on the second page. And this midrash actually sees Yishmael really as Gibor HaTeshuvah, one of the heroes of the idea of Teshuvah, of repentance. Ramas HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'malach. Hashem hinted to the angel, Lirot La'et HaBa'el, to show the angel the well. Amar Oto Malach, said the angel, Ribono Shel Olam, Master of the Universe, L'Rasha Hazeh, to this wicked one, Sha'atid L'Kapeach Et Ha'Ovrim Ve'et HaShavim, who in the future is going to persecute all those who pass them by, your children. He's going to cause so much damage to your children. You're showing him this well? Kill him now. Let him just die of thirst in the desert and think of how much future sorrow is going to be saved. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God says back, Mahu achshav lo tzadik? Is he not now perfectly righteous? Eini dan ta adam ela al shah she'omed ba b'din lefanai. I only judge a man, a person, at the moment they stand in judgment before me. What he is going to be in the future makes no difference. Maybe even what he has been in the past makes no difference. The only thing which affects my judgment is where this person is now. I won't read Rabbi Sacks, but in an early essay by Rabbi Sacks before he became chief rabbi, I think it's from the 1980s, he wrote a beautiful piece in which this idea, really encapsulated by Ishmael, of Ba'asher Husham, of where he is, of a completely innocent child, even if he will develop into something else, nevertheless being this model of teshuvah, of God hearing him at that moment. It's a beautiful piece. I highly recommend it. And just to link it into Bereshit as a whole, you might remember from 2 weeks ago, when we first spoke about Cain is very much not an exemplary character of Tanakh. He's much worse than that. He's the first murderer in history. And yet, in a certain way, he's also seen as the first Baal Teshuvah, as the first person who engages with what he has done and speaks back to God and says, Gadol avoni mi nisor, my sin is too great to bear, and gets something of God's grace in return. So we see something very interesting, that actually often the characters that are seen to be sort of the side, the peripheral, the more problematic characters of Bereshit, of Genesis, in some ways end up capturing some element of being one of the ultimate accolades of Baal Teshuvah. Sorry, it was a question a moment ago.
Well, it has to do with this more, now that you brought it up, but how can you say that Ishmael is doing Teshuvah if he never actually speaks in the subset? It just says, like, his voice is heard, but then the Malach goes to Hagar.
I'll add to your question, and this is something I don't really have an answer for. God hears Kol Hana'ah, the voice of the youth, but we haven't actually heard of him crying out. Who is it that cried out?
Hagar,
right? What you're referring to. Right. Vatisa'at Kol Avatevach. She raises her voice and she cries, and yet it's Ishmael's voice that is heard. I don't really have an answer for that, except maybe to suggest that for some reason the Torah doesn't tell us that he cries out and just gives it to us by saying that God heard it. But yeah, please, Becky.
Well, maybe Ishmael doesn't know what to ask for at this moment, because it seems like in every moment in this story, he's been turned away by certain people. Like, Sarah has totally cast him off. Abraham, who didn't really want to, was reluctant to, also turned him away. And then he separated from his mother, who seems she walked away somewhere else and, like, screamed out to God. So he's kind of just, like, maybe really alone and doesn't know even the words.
So if I'll turn your beautiful idea into a pasuk. The Mizmor Tehillim, the psalm that we say throughout all of the month of Elul and around Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, is Psalm 27, and it features a fascinating line, which doesn't really seem to correspond to the supposed author David. Et avi v'imi azavuni v'Hashem ya'asveni. My father and my mother have abandoned me, and God has gathered me up. That pasuk is just talking about Ishmael. Ishmael is abandoned by everybody, and yet God hears him. Joe.
Does this conflict with the concept of the Ben Sora or Umara that you get him while he's still basically innocent, even though he hasn't really done anything serious yet?
Yes, yeah, it does. It's the opposite of that idea.
Yeah, it's a conflicting concept.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So I'd say this is the stronger one, but well pointed out. Michelle.
I always wonder that if Ishmael was such a bad person, why we would have, like, rabbis, even just that we read before names, like Rabbi Ishmael.
I forgot to point that out. Well done, well done. Right.
You don't have people, I don't think.
People notice that?
Like, named Korach, or maybe there were, but I don't.
So Corinne always said to me, like, Corinne always says that she wanted to call our son, like, Ishmael, right? Mm-hmm. He, like, not we've got a son yet, but, like, obviously, like, I'm like, much as I can happily give to Shir about how you can look at Yishmaelites like, don't worry, we are not calling any future children that we have Yishmaelite. It's not done, but it used to be done, right? You saw, you pointed it out, the third opinion in the Midrash that we read, that the biblical Yishmael was committing bloodshed, was said by Rabbi Yishmael. Anybody get the obvious reason as to why the name died out? Sorry?
Translated,
it's a very beautiful name. Yeah, exactly. As in all the time, all the names of Talmudic rabbis who are called Rabbi Yishmael are prior to Islam. Right? Once the name really becomes associated with Islam, the name in Jewish circles dies out. I know we started a bit late and there's a lot of discussion. It's wonderful. If you've got to go, that's completely fine and definitely part one is over. If you want to stay, I've got about another 10 minutes to say, and two, I think, outstanding sources, which I doubt people have seen. You really can. No offense taken, and I record the shiur, and it goes online, so even if you do leave, you can catch up. Let's start with an unrelated question. It's a very interesting game to play, exercise to do, to look for the first time that a certain word appears in Tanakh, appears in the Bible. What is the first ever example of something? So let's take the idea of love. Ahava. What is the first love in the Bible? First time the word love appears. It's not Adam for Chava. It's not Abraham and Sarah. It's not Hashem for Abraham. One at a time, one at Rivka. Well, one at a time, one at a time. But after the Rekha come off would be a very long time to wait. That's in Devarim. Anyway, Rivka.
Well, I was
going to
someone said.
I don't hear the first part you said. Yeah. Who's that speaking now? Should be Abeha there? I'm not sure it does, but we can check it afterwards. Gabe is on it. How do you cheat? We always assume, us moderns assume, that what must love be? Love must be between a couple, between a man and a woman. First love that appears in the Bible is not that between a father and a son. What is that pasuk? Between Abraham and Yitzchak? Beginning of chapter 22. Just over the page, if you've still got your chumash open. Page 100. One of the most chilling and most memorable of all verses. Vayhi achar hadvarim ha'ele, and was after these things. Vayohim nisa et Abraham, and God tested Abraham. Vayomelav Abraham, Vayomel hinein, he said, Abraham, I'm here. Vayomel kachnai bincha kichitcha, take your son, your only son, asher ahavta, who you love. Et Yitzchak, v'lech lecha le'eretz ha'moriah, v'halei u'sham le'olah, and raise him up as an offering. The first time the word love ever appears between father and son, between Abraham and Yitzchak, and we miss it, I think, because the end of the pasuk is then so cataclysmic, so enormous. This love now stands to be destroyed. So I just want to share an amazing piece with you. See what I did this time, everybody? I divided my source sheet up into two separate source sheets. That way you can't read it. This is by an Israeli author called Meir Shalev. Great author. He's got a book on the first love. Sorry, the first. Every time the first something appears. So whilst it's going around, I'll read it. Once I happened to visit a fishing village in the Andaman Sea, west of the Malay Peninsula in the Indian Ocean. Unlike typical fishing villages, this one was not situated on shore, but floated in the sea. Its houses were built on rafts that were anchored side by side and connected with ropes and wooden walkways. The villagers were Muslims, Malay fishermen. I walked among their houses until I came upon a half-open door, beyond which sat a thin, wiry man. We exchanged glances, and the man smiled and invited me in with a wave of his hand. We drank tea. On the wall were a photograph and a drawing. The photo was some sort of European landscape. Green valleys, reddish-brown valleys, waterfalls. The drawing was readily identifiable. A young lad lying upon an altar an old man brandishing a knife over him, an angel hovering overhead, and in the background a ram, its horns caught in the bush. For a moment I thought I'd stumbled upon one of the 10 lost tribes, and in my mind I began to compose letters to the chief rabbinate and the Jewish agency, urging that these people be airlifted to Israel. But before throwing my arms around my long-lost brother, I asked him what was depicted in the drawing. The man pointed at the old man with a knife and pronounced with an unfamiliar lilt, Ibrahim. He then pointed to the lad and said, Ismail. I knew different, yet said nothing. When I got back to Jerusalem, I checked and discovered that, indeed, according to some interpreters of the Quran, it was Ishmael, and not Yitzchak, whom God had ordered Abraham to sacrifice. I report this with a degree of embarrassment. I should have known this all along. Instead of the requisite amazement, I felt sorry. The Israeli-Arab conflict, I realized, isn't only about land or holy places. It's a dispute over something more difficult, love, specifically a father's love. And to make things even more complicated, this is not a love that is expressed in a gift of many colors or by a better blessing, but rather by the most troubling act to be found in the book of Genesis, abiding the Bible. It is written, take your son, your favored son, Isaac, your son whom you love. And so when God gave his command, the emotional basis for the problem that afflicts us to this day was set in place. Powerful, powerful piece. Fascinating, right? That word ahavta there is what causes, that word of love causes so much dread. I want to finish with this. If you flip forward to next week's parasha, Abraham dies, chapter 25 of Bereshit. Bottom of page 120. Ishmael has been expelled. Ishmael went to live in Egypt. They've separated. Abraham dies. Yitzchak is the son who has stayed at home and stayed local. And Abraham died at a ripe old age, old, satisfied, and he's gathered to his people. And what do we read in the next verse? And his sons, Yitzchak and Ishmael, bury him. Ishmael comes back. Ishmael knows what's happened. And he has to be present at his father's funeral. He's not absent. He's there. I want to share just the most amazing midrash. This is from Pirkei de Rebbe Eliezer. Pirkei de Rebbe Eliezer is an interesting collection. It's from somewhere between the 8th and 10th century, somewhere in what would be between modern-day Iraq and Israel. Much of Pirkei de Rebbe Eliezer is an argument with Islamic interpretations of the Quran and of the biblical stories, and sort of setting it straight. But this is an amazing midrash, which I'm also told appears in some Muslim sources as well, a variation on it. So I'm sorry I wasn't able to put a translation there, but you can follow with me if you want. But you don't have to. If you don't, you can just listen along, and you'll get the story. The question the Midrash sets to answer is, what happens once Yitzchak is expelled in between that and Abraham dying? What happened to their contacts? How was it that Ishmael had heard that Abraham died? And it gives the following suggestion as to what might have taken place. So it describes in the first paragraph how terrible for Abraham it was, this decision to expel his son. It was a miracle that he'd been born. I'm halfway through the second full line of the Hebrew. Umikol harat shaba'u al Abraham, and of all the evil things that came to Abraham, hara be'inav hadavah hazeh, this was the very worst that happened. God told him to do it, to get rid of his son. This caused him great pain. You can turn over the page. Vayfa nafsho shel Yishmael, and the soul of Yishmael gave out batzema with thirst. He threw himself under the trees of the desert, and who was it that pointed it out? Okay. That Ishmael doesn't say anything in the biblical text, doesn't cry out. Well, here he does. But Aman, he says, he cries out, Elohei Abraham, God of Abraham, Avi, my father, Yesh lefanecha totzot mayim, you control the waters, kach et nafshi mimeni, take my soul from me, va'alamut batzema, don't let me die of thirst. But God hears him, shamayat kelokim kol hanar, etc., etc. And there they get the, he gets the water, and they continue, and they go to live in the desert of Egypt. Vayesh Busham, and he dwells in this desert, the second paragraph on this page. Vayeshet b'midbar Paran, lives in the desert of Paran. Shalach Yishmael, Yishmael sent, v'lakach lo isha mibenot Moav, and he took a wife from the daughters of Moav. Okay? People remember Moav, the Moabites. Now watch this. La'achar shalosh shanim, after 3 years, halach Avraham lirot et Yishmael. Avraham went to visit Yishmael. Went to see him. I love this. This is wonderful. When Ishbar le Sarah, he promised Sarah shelo yarad ma'al hagamal, that he wouldn't get off the camel. Right? He promised that he wouldn't stay there so long that he'd have time to get off the camel. He would stay on the camel. He just wanted to see Ishmael, to see how he was doing. Right? It's like you can go there, but don't get out of the car. Right? You can really see the way in which they see husband-wife relations. He gets there halfway through the day. In other words, the boiling hot moment of the day. And he finds the wife, the new wife of Ishmael. Amarla, he says to her, Heichan hu Ishmael? Where's Ishmael? Amralo, she says to him, Halach hu ve'imo lehavi pevot v'tamarim min hamidbar. He and his mother, they've gone to gather fruit and dates from the desert. Amarla, he says to her, Tnili ma'at lechem, can you give me a bit of bread for mayim and water? Ki aifa nafshi miderech hamidbar, because I'm so exhausted from the ways of the desert. Amra lo, she says to him, Eini lechem v'lo mayim. Sorry, we're all out. I haven't got anything in the house. Amar la, he says to her, okay, can you just leave a message, please? Kshavo yishma higidi lo, please tell him, et hadorim halim, these things. Ben chacham kachetzi chacham. The son of a wise man is half a wise man. Coded, but I think what it means is, you should be doing better than this. You know your father is a chacham, is a wise person. You haven't picked well. V'amri lo, and tell him, Zaken echad me'eretz Canaan, an old man from the land of Canaan, Bali Rotcha, came to see you. V'amar, and said, Chalach mi petem beitecha she'ena tovarach, and turned away from your doorstep, which is not fitting for you. When Yishmael returned from the desert, she told him this message, Ben Chacham, Kachetzi Chacham, that the son of a wise man is half a wise man. And Yishmael understood what had happened. And his mother sent, and she took a wife, a new wife for him from her father's people. From his father's people. Anybody still following in the Hebrew?
Yeah.
And what was her name?
Fatima.
Shema. And her name was Fatima. Right? You don't need to have too great a knowledge of Islam to know that Fatima is quite a significant name in Islamic texts in relation to Muhammad. Obviously it's not talking about that Fatima, but whoa, right? That's fascinating. That of all names chosen, clearly knowing it's not a biblical name. V'od achar shlosh shanim. 3 years later, halach Abraham lirot et Yishmael. Abraham went again to visit Yishmael, and once again, nishba l'Sarah. He promised Sarah kapama rishona, just like the first time. She'eni yored min agamal. He wouldn't get off the camel. V'makom sheYishrael sharui veYishmael. He got there at the hottest point of the day, and there he found Ishmael's wife. And said to her, Heichan hu Ishmael? Where is Ishmael? Amra lo, she says, he and his mother, they've gone to graze the camels in the desert. He's never at home. Amarla, he says to her, the same request, just give me a bit of bread, a bit of wine, a bit of water, because I'm so tired from the journey. And what does she do? She takes out bread and she gives him. And at that moment, Abraham sees that his son has found a wife and has built a home, just as the home that he wanted to have, a hospitable home, one that welcomes strangers. Amad Avraham, Avraham stood, Bahayamit Palel Lifnei Habore, and he stood up and he prayed in front of God, Al Benof for his son, Mitmale Beito Shel Yishmael Mikol Tuv Mimin Habrachot, and Yishmael's home was filled with all good things, all blessings. But Kshaba Yishmael, and when Yishmael came home, Higida Lo Et Hadavar, she told him what had happened. Ve'yeda Yishmael, and Yishmael knew Sha'ad Achshav, that all of this while, Rachamei Aviv Alav Karachem Aval Banim, his father's mercy, his father's love and compassion for him was there, like any father's love for their son. La'achar mitata shel Sarah, after Sarah's death, Chazar Avraham, Avraham came back, v'lakach et gerushata, and took back the wife he had divorced, in other words, Hagar, Yishmael's mother, she'ne'emar v'yosef Avraham v'yikach ishan, Avraham once again took a wife, mitka'amar Yosef, by saying once again, mashma, it implies, Shapama Rishona, that she was the first time that Taishto was also his wife. That's the Midrash. It is such a beautiful Midrash. I'm not going to pretend that it's a mainstream Midrash and it's the Midrash on it, but just let's finish with this question for yourself. What was going on at some point between the year 800 and the year 1000, at some point between Iraq and Israel, that this Midrash would be rewritten? And we started this evening with Tehillim, that things should improve in Israel. And please God, may the world once again be reconciled, even if not now, in the future. Have a great week, everybody. Yeah.